Yeah. All right, thank you. My name's Lawrence, I'm an addict.
Hi, Lawrence.
I'm gonna share something with you. I'm fucking nervous, man. Shit. This room's full of people and my anxiety is really getting to me. But I don't wanna bring no profanity into the room tonight because I know we're all spiritual beings here today. But anyway, I'm gonna start off by thanking God that I'm alive, thanking God that I'm here today, and thanking God for this 12-step fellowship program. Because I truly believe that God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And all I ever wanted to do after 18 years of smoking crack cocaine and taking heroin was just to stop. But left to my own devices, I was unable to do that. But when God entered into my life, I found a way to do that on a daily basis. So for 5 years now, I've had a daily reprieve where I haven't had to administrate a drink or drug into my body, you know, and to me, that's a really great thing, and I have to thank God for that. You know, as I said, I smoked crack cocaine for 18 years, and I'm sitting here tonight, right, and this mic's doing me because I'm having to lean into the mic and share with you guys. But I'm sitting here, and my ego's going that, you know, I've only got 15 minutes to share my experience, strength, and hope. I should be sitting over there, and I should be sharing for 40 minutes. Why am I not sharing for 40 minutes? I should be sharing for 40. No, but you know, God's got me in a place where he wants me to be, and I'm sharing for 15 minutes. So I'm really going to speak fast, so you might have to listen carefully to what I'm saying. You know, yeah. After 18 years of smoking crack cocaine, I wanted to stop. I couldn't stop. I was at a DDU, and I was on a methadone script. They call it a maintenance script, because I took heroin as well as smoking crack cocaine, you know, And it was suggested that I go along to a treatment center because I was at this DDU for 4 years. And throughout that time, I always used other substances on top, my methadone, you know. And yeah, they call it a maintenance program, but it didn't really maintain me because I always use heroin on top, you know. And I went along to a treatment center and I spent 10 months in rehab. You know, I went to a first stage up in Norfolk, then I went on to a second stage over in South London, and I got introduced to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, you know. That was one of the conditions of the house, that we attend meetings, at least 3 meetings a week, and I did so. And I got introduced to these rooms. And upon completion of treatment, it was suggested that I attend 90 meetings in 90 days, which I did. It suggested that I get a sponsor and I take the 12 steps of this program, which I wanted to do, but I didn't complete it at that time. So at this time, I went on and I got some voluntary work and I attended meetings on a regular basis because I didn't have much else to do. So I just attended meetings and I heard people sharing their experience, strength and hope. I heard people sharing the program of recovery. You know, and I stuck around for a while and I got to 18 months clean. And I went to this meeting one day and I heard this celebrity speaker say something like this. He says, as a result of taking these 12 steps, I have had a spiritual awakening. He goes, you may have had a spiritual awakening, but you haven't had the spiritual awakening that I have had, because I've had this spiritual awakening as a result of taking these 12 steps. So I looked at this this speaker. And in my mind, I thought, oh, that's correct. But in my mind, I was going, you cunt, because I hadn't taken the 12 steps at that time, you know. And it really dawned on me, there was something missing in my recovery, you know. I couldn't figure it out. I was doing all the things that were suggested. I even found employment. My life had got a lot better, but there was something missing. There was a void in my life. So I listened to what this speaker said, and I took on the suggestion. After that meeting, I got myself a sponsor. And I embarked on taking the 12 steps. And I know today one of the reasons why I didn't embark on this journey, because I didn't want to reveal myself to anybody. You know, I had some hidden secrets that I didn't really want to reveal. And I found it difficult sharing with another male some of my deepest, darkest secrets. But anyway, I got myself a sponsor and I embarked on this journey of taking the 12 steps. You know, and it was explained to me, because I heard it many times in meetings, what step one was. I heard other people sharing their experience, strength and hope around the steps. And I had no real knowledge of what they were saying or what was taking place within their lives, because I hadn't embarked on that journey of taking the steps. So I took the steps with the sponsor, and he explained what step one was to me. He said, you know, in each human being, we've got a thing called an emotional barometer. And the reason why you took drugs, Lawrence, because every time your emotional levels rose, you made an association with taking drugs. And once you've made that association, you've got a thing called a mental obsession, you know, and the mental obsession centers in your mind, right? And once the mental obsession kicks in, it gives you this thought to take drugs. And once the obsession kicks in, you take drugs. You administrate drugs inside your body. And once you administrate the drugs inside your body, you have a thing called an abnormal reaction. This is called an allergy. And then you suffer from a thing called phenomenal of cravings. And this is where the body starts to physically crave the drugs, and you continue to take drugs over and over and over. And once all your drugs is finished and once all your money is finished, you go through a spree called shame, guilt, and remorse. And this is another emotion. So you find yourself in this cycle continuously. Now, you've got no defense once the mental obsession kicks into your mind, right? And he explained it, and I kind of understood what he said. And my understanding of step one, we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction and our lives had become unmanageable, was the fact that every time I put a drink or drug in my body, I couldn't stop, you know, even though I didn't want to do it. But once the mental obsession kicked in and I administrated that drug in my body, I could not stop, you know. And I went to any lengths to take drugs. I would do anything to take drugs, you know. And I did it for many years, you know. I neglected myself. I neglected my children. I stole from my mum. I did all degrading things that I thought I would never do, but I ended up doing, you know. And that was my understanding of step one. This is how it was explained to me. And he said, we need a power greater than ourselves to restore us to sanity, which was step two, because I've got an illness that centers in my mind, he told me. You know, and I totally agreed with him, because I couldn't figure out why I could not stop taking drugs, you know. And so when he talked about we need a power greater than ourselves to restore us to sanity, and he spoke in detail, he told me, you need a power greater than yourself to rearrange your emotional state of mind, because your emotional state of mind was fucked. You know, that's the reason why you took drugs. You made an association with your emotions and taking drugs. So now you need a power greater than yourself to restore your emotional state of mind, you know? And my understanding of this, and he explained it to me, was God, you know? He made no bones about it, you know? And then we moved into step three. You know, what is step three? Tell me, please. All right, we made a decision to turn our wills and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him, right? And he explained this to me. We entered into the spiritual realms of the program, you know. He explained it simple as this. This is honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, you know. We have to undergo some form of psychic change. We have to undergo a spiritual experience. And you've got to actually let God into your life so you can move on. You know, we just got to have trust in God so we could move on. So in step four, we took a self-appraisal of ourselves, you know. And that's what I did in step four. I took stock of myself. I took inventory of myself, you know. And we did this by looking at my resentments, looking at the cause of that resentment, looking at what effect it had on me, you know, my resentments, because it's always got an effect on me, you know. Sometimes it affects my personal relationships, my security and so forth, you know. And we looked at my mistake, what was my part in this relationship, in this resentment, you know. And I always had a part to play in a resentment, you know. And we also looked at my defects of character, my dishonesty, you know, my selfishness, my self-righteousness. And I'm a very self-centered person, self-righteous person, you know. I get a resentment if somebody doesn't act in the way that I want them to act. I have a resentment against that individual, you know. And we looked at this, and we looked at the harm that these resentments were causing. I was harming myself and I was harming others. And when I looked at this, I shared it with my sponsor, and another human, my sponsor and God, you know. And and that was a very relieving thing to do, to actually share something with another human being, which was my sponsor, some of my deepest, darkest secrets. You know, I shared this with him, you know, and in step six, we looked at my defects of character. We asked God to remove my defects of character. And then we went back to him in step seven and we humbly asked him to remove my shortcomings, you know. And some of my defects of character are things that I have grown up with, you know. It's been embedded in me, you know. So I really have to humbly go back to God and ask him to remove some of these defects of character within me, my shortcomings, you know, things that I'm coming up short in, my deficiencies, you know. And I experienced this, you know, in recovery, what my shortcomings were, you know. I work for an organization, and I've been in post for 3 years. And after, say, I've got 5 minutes, all right. After, say, 2 years of being in this organization, they asked for a CRB check, you know. Yeah, and they should have asked for it in the first 3 months, but they asked for a CRB check. And, you know, they sent off the CRB check and it came back, you know, and they called me into the office one day and they said, Lawrence, there's been some discrepancies with your application form and your CRB check, you know. On your CRB check, it's got, you've got previous convictions that you didn't declare on your application form, you know, and really this was a sacking offence, you know. But what had happened, I hadn't been entirely honest on my application form. I put down what I thought were my previous convictions, you know, but when it came to light, I hadn't been totally honest, you know. But the discrepancy, I was fortunate enough that the environment that I work in, I had been security cleared to go into this environment. So after an investigation, they allowed me to continue working with the organization. But what I'm trying to say is my shortcomings, the things that are really embedded within me, I've really got to look at it. I've really got to look at it and I've really got to address it, because if I don't address it, you know, I come up short at certain things, because I can just be, my character defects is I'm dishonest, and I have been most of my life, so it comes as naturally to be dishonest, you know. So it's really a beautiful thing that I can look at this throughout the steps and I can go back and look at my shortcomings and things that I'm coming up short in, I go and I can actually go back and correct it, you know. And in step eight, we made a list of all the persons that we had harmed, and in step nine, we made direct amends to them, you know. And for me, that's been a beautiful experience, you know. And it's also been a painful experience making direct amends, you know. One of the amends that I did make was to my mother, you know. She brought me back to the Caribbean. She paid for my fears to go back to Grenada. She had built a house out there, and we're sitting on the veranda one evening, you know, and I'm there and I'm making amends to my mum, you know, for, because, you know, my life didn't turn out in the way that my mum wanted it to be, you know. I didn't fulfill her ambitions and her dreams, you know, and so I'm making amends to her. And it's evening time and she turns to me and she says, Lawrence, listen, don't worry about it. You know, throughout your addiction, I was always praying for you, you know, and you know, and I did my mum a lot of wrongs, you know. I stole from her in my addiction, you know, and she was always there for me. She always stood by my side and she always loved me as a son, you know. That mother's love never went from her, you know, but she just told me to forget about it, and that was a real emotional thing. But also a painful time for me was making amends to my daughter. My daughter's 19 years old and I didn't have an active role in her life throughout her growing up, you know. And today, She's got a daughter. I'm actually a grandfather today at age 44, but, you know, I don't agree with it, but there we are. But I'm making amends to my daughter, and I can see that she's still got resentments against me because I didn't play an active role in her life, you know, and that's been a painful thing, you know. Sometimes I look in her eyes, but she doesn't say much, but I know that she really wants to let off on me. She really wants to tell me about myself for not being there for her, but maybe I wasn't there for her in her growing up, but maybe I could be there for her daughter, my grandchild. But anyway, you know, yeah, and taking inventory of myself, you know, at night I go back home and I review my day, you know, if I had caused anybody any harm, you know, I know to make amends to that person, you know. I can actually look at it, and step 10 is about me being conscious today. You know, I've got a consciousness within me. I know what is morally right from what is morally wrong. You know, I cannot override that today as a result of this process. And step 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, praying only knowledge through his will and the power to carry that out. You know, I do this on a daily basis. I do prayer and meditation. I center myself before I leave the house. And step 12, you know, as a result of these steps, as that speaker said, you know, we would have had a spiritual awakening and we practice these principles in all our affairs and carry the message to the addict that still suffers. And I'm able to do that today. I'm able to work with others as a result of this process, you know. And yeah, it's really been a really beautiful process for me. Recovery has actually changed my life. I hear it said a lot in meeting. It's been beyond my wildest dreams. You know, and if you're new around, just keep coming back, you know, because there is a solution within these rooms. You know, there is a solution to the problem. And I'm going to end it on this. I know I just had 5 minutes. I'm going to end it on this, right? When I first came around, I heard the word miracle bantered around in these rooms, you know, and my understanding of a miracle was like some biblical experience, like Moses parting the Red Sea or something like that. That was my idea of a miracle. So I couldn't agree with the term when I came into these rooms and I heard them speaking about miracles, right? But my understanding of a miracle is some unexplainable event, some supernatural event, unexplainable event. So my definition of a miracle is this today, you know. Whilst I was in active addiction, my father died. He died in 1998. He worked for British Rail for over 28 years. And when he retired, I think it was in 1991 or 1992, he was given a watch for his retirement present. So he died in 1992. Now, my mum held on to this watch for many years, you know. My dad hadn't even worn the watch, you know. And about 6 months ago, my mum came up to me. She was on her way to Portugal. She was going to Fatima on a pilgrimage, and she's a very religious woman. And she called me in the house, and we're sitting down and we're talking, and she goes, Lawrence, I've got this watch here. You know, it was given to your father as his retirement present. I want you to have it, you know, and it's a gold watch. It's on my hand right now, you know. And I took the watch from my mum, right? But yeah, the reason my mum gave me this watch, because today she's able to have trust in me. You know, she's the way I'm living my life, she can see that I'm not going to sell the watch. And the miracle is this, the watch is on my hand today. The watch is not with a crack dealer. The watch is not in cash converters. The watch is not with a jeweler. It sits on my hand today. And that's due to the fact of these rooms and the people in these rooms and the recovery process in these rooms that I believe today miracles are possible. And I'll leave it there. Thanks. Thank you.